Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
Life on the farm is kind of laid back. Train much an old country boy like me came back. Thoroughly to rise, early in the sack. I thank God I'm a country boy. Well, a simple kind of life never did me no harm. Raising me a family and working on the farm. Days are all filled with an easy country charm. Thank God I'm a country boy. Well, I got me a fine wife. I got me old fiddle. When the sun's coming up, I got cakes on the riddle. Life ain't nothing but a funny, funny riddle. Thank God I'm a country boy.
Once again today on Route 51, we are going up the country, and today we're also going back in time to talk about what it was like growing up on a small family farm in central Wisconsin back in the 1950s. I'm Glenn Mobrick. My guest today is James L. Pope, or Jim as he likes to be called, the author of Everyday Adventures of a Farm Boy in the 50s, an illustrated hardcover volume written for fourth grade students, detailing Jim's childhood on a Waupaca County farm 60 years ago. Jim Pope's book is part of an even bigger picture. It's part of the Rural Heritage Reading Project, which teaches kids about their local history and culture while getting them interested in reading. Jim Pope speaks to many elementary school classes across central Wisconsin every year, spreading his message. And here's the really cool part. He not only wrote and illustrated his book, he published it himself with his own money, and he gives away hundreds of copies, gives them away to local fourth grade students every year. Jim's got a fascinating story to tell, and he'll be sharing it with us for the next hour. Do you worry that kids today are growing up not knowing how to read and write the way they should, not knowing enough about our natural world, and not appreciating their own culture and the tradition of family farming in central Wisconsin? Now, maybe you grew up on a small family farm and you'd like to share your experiences. If any of those things are true, give us a call. Our lines are wide open right now at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. And I want to mention right at the outset of the show, we seem to be having a few technical problems right now at our Park Falls studio on WHBM 90.3 FM, and we are aware of them and trying to straighten that out. So, Jim, tell us all about the Rural Heritage Reading Project.
Well, Glenn, first of all, thanks very much for having me in. I appreciate the time. The Rural Heritage Reading Project is really a retirement project for me. I retired from being a administrator in a public school system for 30 years, retired about 4 years ago. In anticipation of that, I started writing a book, and it ended up being called Everyday Adventures of a Farm Boy in the 50s. It got its start back when my daughters, when they were in grade school, early grade school, elementary school, and I would tell them stories about what it was like being a kid on a farm back when I was a boy, because at that point we didn't live on a farm. And we had great times talking about that, and they'd ask questions, and it was just we had really good times with those stories. Well, they then went on to school, to college, got their degrees, became teachers, got married, had kids, one of them came to me and said, "Dad, you really should write some of those stories down, because we're not going to be able to remember them, and chances are you're not going to remember them after too long." So we started doing that, and it all started. I took a huge piece of paper and made a sketch of things that I could remember, the topics of stories, like the crick and the barn and the silo and the woods and the swamp and the cedars and the big hill and the outhouse, all sorts of stuff. Well, as it turned out, we ended up with about 130 stories, with the intent being each story would be pretty much a chapter.
Well, there are a lot of stories in the book, but not that many.
No. When we got done with 130 of them, we looked and said, wow, you know, even Harry Potter doesn't have 130 chapters. So we kind of condensed that down to 90, and I've got it all laid out into three separate volumes. And this first book, Everyday Adventures of a Farm Boy in the 50s, has 30 chapters, and it's written for fourth graders. And the reason that we picked fourth graders is we wanted to tie it into their Wisconsin history curriculum and their social studies when they're in fourth grade. That's what they study. So I worked with a number of different teachers with fourth grade classes, and they were gracious enough to let me experiment by coming in and reading to the kids, because I was used to writing stories for school board members and specifications.
You were the transportation director for the Stevens Point area school district?
Correct, yes. Stevens Point is a school district, pretty large. We have a big transportation operation with about 400 square miles, and I did that for 30 years. And
I'm sure they paid you well, but that doesn't make you independently wealthy, right?
That is a very good assessment of my financial condition. I am not independently wealthy.
And here you retired, and instead of putting in a swimming pool or taking your long-suffering wife, who's watching us from the other studio, to Paris, or buying a cabin up north, you decide to write and publish a children's book.
Well, as a matter of fact, we did go to France a couple years ago to visit one of our daughters over there. So she got part of that. But they had one of the things that we'd saved up, and there was some things that one of the projects that I decided to do was to give back, because administrators that I knew, we worked hard, long hours, but we had decent pay, but I decided I wanted to give back to communities in the central part of the state, as well as keep me busy doing something.
So you wrote this book. You did all the illustrations yourself, or did you have help with that?
Well, originally there were no illustrations until one of my daughters, they looked at, "Dad, the stories are nice, but you got to remember you're writing this for fourth graders, and even Harry Potter has illustrations at the start of each chapter." So, the illustrations were drawn by myself, and they're pretty uneven. At one point, I even went to an art teacher down in Waupaca and asked him, told him what I was doing, and
you did a marvelous job. I don't think they're uneven at all, and in fact, I wouldn't know how to draw a box elder bug, but you did it.
One of the neat things is that you can, with the internet nowadays, you can go on, if you want to know what something looks like, you go on there and you go, "Oh yeah, that's right. This is, I can draw that." I've always been able to draw things that way. They're pretty simple illustrations.
But it's a substantial book, okay? There's, about 250 pages. It's a big book. It's got a hard cover. It's got these illustrations. And you paid for the publication.
Right. Yeah, we started a nonprofit association, it's called, which in Wisconsin is it means that it's not for tax purposes or anything like that. This is not tax deductible or anything like that, although it's getting bigger than I ever anticipated. We might have to incorporate it as a nonprofit organization, which would
that would be a good thing.
Yeah, because it's we ended up having to reprint the three books are somewhat chronological. This first one, most of the stories are from when I was, even before I was going to school.
But you publish the book, mm-hmm. and then you not only make these presentations to classrooms, to fourth grade students, you give away hundreds of copies. You just give them away.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's tied into some of the conclusions we came to after talking with lots of teachers before I actually started on the project. The Rural Heritage Reading Project is really going into the schools. It just happens to be with my book. The idea of the project is first of all, to teach kids part of their rural history, their cultural heritage, because things are so different in central Wisconsin now. But the way things are in central Wisconsin owes a lot to what they were, what they used to be. It wasn't that mm-hmm. things were better back then or the good old days or anything like that at all. It's just they were different. And I think it's important that kids understand that historical heritage that their community comes from. And so teaching them some local history was the first objective, and the second was to encourage kids to enjoy reading. So we wrote the book like we did, again, working with some teachers. I had some good editors from teachers and from my wife in terms of making it for fourth graders so that they can enjoy it. They not only learn some things, but they can have fun doing it. One of the teachers we worked with said that she thought the book was kind of like a cross between Little House on the Prairie and Leave It to Beaver. And I took that as a compliment because I really like Leave It to Beaver. So that's what we do. We try to encourage them to read, and by giving them a copy of the book, the teachers have said that the kids really take ownership of it.
You bet.
Encourages them to read. They have fun with it, and I've gotten many reports from teachers who said that kids that normally weren't reading very much, they started reading, and they really like the book.
So if those of you who are listening, if you'd like to find out more about Jim Pope, or James L. Pope, as it says on the book, and the Rural Heritage Reading Project, the website is ruralheritagereadingproject.org, correct?
Correct. Or they can drop a line at P.O. Box 128, Plover, Wisconsin, 54467. And we're always looking for additional schools to go to. In the past, well, we're going on 4 years now, we've given out just a little bit over 3,000 copies of the book.
Wow.
And we've had to go to a second printing of it. I'd originally just thought that we made enough copies that it would give me 4 or 5 years to write book two, and then we could continue on with that book. Well, we ran out of books real quick, and one of the things that I hadn't planned on at all was Barnes & Noble got a hold of it, and they're selling it, and which is kind of fun. We have go to book fairs and to bookstores and have readings and things like that. But I hadn't.
How many markets are they selling it in? Just in Wisconsin?
Or? Wisconsin and Minnesota. And,
good for you.
So that's kind of fun. And we've limited our talks pretty much to central Wisconsin, although we may all the way from the Appleton area west to Wisconsin Rapids and Marshfield, north up to Maryland, south down to about the Wautoma area, down in that area. But the Wapaka area and the little towns, Waiwega, Fremont, Manawal, Clintonville, Iola, that's our core area because that's where we grew up. And it's really fun going to the Wapaka schools and a lot of the kids.
And letting them know what it used to be back.
Right, yes.
And it's not even that long ago. That's what's amazing. It's only 60 years ago, and it was an entirely different world back then.
That's one of the things when I'm talking to the kids with the classroom presentations, I will go in and I'll spend the first 10 or 15 minutes just talking about how things were so different back then. And kids nowadays really can't have a hard time comprehending a world without telephones, without televisions, without the internet, without computers. And in our neighborhood, most every farmer, with the exception of one, we were pretty well poor subsistence farmers. Mm-hmm. We didn't know we were poor at the time. I mean, it's the way life was. So we didn't have a lot of those things, although we get a television, a telephone on by the time I get to the end of book two.
But in this book in the 50s, and this is my question, how do you get kids, so many of them addicted to video games and cable television today, to listen to your stories about growing up on a farm without indoor plumbing, with an outhouse, without a television, with no furnace, and the winters get pretty cold in Wapaka County, only one clock and one scratchy tube-powered radio. How do kids relate to that?
Well, that's one of the things that is important for kids to understand, because they are so much absorbed with the world that we have now with so many material things. I mean, it's just there's a plethora of stuff out there for kids. I mean, you see kids in grade school with cell phones and that type of thing. And I'm not saying that's bad. It's just so different from back then. And basically what we do is each chapter is pretty much into a couple of parts. So the first part will talk about some aspect of things, family life on the farm back then. Then the second part of that chapter will have some adventure my brothers and I had regarding that particular aspect of the farm. And we try to keep it light because we had a lot of fun. It was, as a kid growing up on the farm, there was a lot of work, but there was an awful lot of fun too. And we got to do things that kids nowadays couldn't dream of doing in terms of the activities that we would have that we'd make for ourselves out in the woods and by the creek, even out in the fields after work was done and up in the barn, and a lot of pretend and a lot of play acting and that type of thing. But it was fun.
We're going to take a very short break, and we'll be back to talk to Jim Pope about his book, Everyday Adventures of a Farm Boy in the 50s. Talk about exactly what it was like growing up on a small town, Wapaka County farm in the 50s. If you'd like to join the conversation, Jim's a fascinating guy. We've got wide open phone lines right now, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning and out in the garden, get your ripe ones, don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forgot all about the sweating and the digging. Every time I go out and pick me a digging. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What would life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, working to build the local economy and strengthen the community by making local business everybody's business. Learn more about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51. My guest, Jim Pope of the Rural Heritage Reading Project, author of Everyday Adventures of a Farm Boy in the 50s. And again, if you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-780-9742. Jim, can you turn to pages 183 and 184 of your book and just read some of that for us? Tell us about the farm that you grew up on. That's a section. To me, that section of the book kind of sums everything up.
Well, this is chapter 24, The Singing Sawing Machine. And whoops. Excuse me, I told you
we clunk around quite a bit here.
This chapter actually ties into the next one, which is called The Singer Sewing Machine, with a separate story. But this is The Singing Sewing Machine, and we cut wood on our farm. That was the only fuel source we had. And there's a lot of work involved with that. Up on the hill, when you get a load of the logs back home and cutting that. And this chapter is talking about the sawing machine, which was a little, I think the blade was probably about 2 feet in diameter, but it was hooked up to the pulley on the back of our little farm wall A, and that's what this is about. On a farm, a kid can have tons of fun doing all sorts of things, and sometimes you don't even have to really do anything to have a good time. You can have almost as much fun by just paying attention to what's around you. Tasting, feeling, watching, smelling, and listening can all be plenty interesting around lots of different things, from hayfields and bumblebees to blackberries and bunnies. Ma says God gave most everybody 5 senses, if you don't count common sense, and she tells us we should try to learn how to use all of them well. I consider that for a while and conclude there's no question that my senses get good workouts on the farm. Some things stand out as striking them especially strong. The taste of a sandy carrot when I pull it directly from the ground, taking only enough time to swipe it across my pant leg a couple times to knock off most of the dirt before I stick it right into my mouth for the freshest flavor you can imagine. The feel of cold, wet sand at the bottom of the creek when I wiggle my bare toes in it while waiting on a hot summer day. The sight of a brown and white Guernsey parade coming back from pasture for the evening milking after I go down their way and give a yell of, "Come, boss!" sicking the dog in their direction to keep him from straying too far out of line. The smell of newly cut hay when I'm walking past the field, a fresh fragrance that's around for just a couple of days while we let it all dry out right before loading it up and taking it to the barn. The soft sound of a whippoorwill announcing the end of a spring day as we walk along the woods by the creek during sunset time. Ma says she likes its call best when it's mixed with the happy noise of laughing boys. She says that together, those sounds give an air of all being well with the world.
Everyday Adventures of a Farm Boy in the 50s, a book written for fourth graders by Jim Pope, a former administrator with the Stevens Point Area School District. Let's go to the phones. Kathy in Catawba, you are on Route 51 with Jim Pope. Hello, Kathy.
Hi, how are you?
We're doing well.
Wonderful program. I'm a 70-year-old grandma, but I grew up on a dairy farm in Dane County, the oldest of 7 kids, so I can relate to a whole lot of things that you're talking about. And then after I got married, my husband and I moved to northern Wisconsin to his hometown area in Price County, and we raised our 8 kids up here. And so there's, a lot of things they would appreciate as well. And I would love to hear more about this rural heritage reading program. I have done some egg in the classroom presentations for school kids in this area, and I am amazed how far removed, even if we live in this small rural community, so many of the kids are, oh, my grandpa lived on a farm or something. I mean, but they themselves have had not a whole lot of experience even being on a farm.
Kathy, before I have Jim answer your question, can you answer a question for me?
Sure.
Are you listening to us right now on the Park Falls station, 90.3 FM?
No, I don't think so. I'm not really sure. 90.3, yeah.
You are, and it's coming in fine.
Yep, it's
fine. Wonderful. We were worried about whether the transmission was working. Jim, if you'd like to respond to what Kathy just said.
Well, Kathy, you raised some very interesting and significant points. It's the whole culture was so different back then. And again, not better or not worse, although having gone through it, I would lean towards a little bit better. But it's something that if we don't tell kids about it, if we don't write it down, it's going to be lost. Because when our generation is gone, those experiences and that culture just won't be around anymore. And that's one of the reasons for writing the book. And it's a feel good book in the sense that there are some sad things in it. When you have, when you're living on the farm, there's always death and, you know, with butchering and that type of things.
Oh, yes.
So everything wasn't a barrel of laughs and we didn't have very much money at all. But we worked around that. And it's the kind of thing where it is very important for kids nowadays to understand what was going on back then.
Kathy, do you have a quick follow-up? We've got about 30 seconds before our news break.
No, I was just going to say my youngest son teaches school in Manawa, so I'm hoping that maybe you'll find out more about that project too.
That'd be very good if you'd have him look at our website. We've not been to the Manawa schools yet.
Okay.
I'd love to go to the fourth grade classes up there.
And okay, again, I will talk to him about it.
And again, that website is ruralheritagereadingproject.org.
Okay, thank you.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. My guest is Jim Pope of the Rural Heritage Reading Project. He teaches fourth graders about farm life in the 50s. We'll be back with more right after this news.
Public Radio include Wisconsin Farmers Union, a member-driven farm organization committed to enhancing the quality of life for family farmers, rural communities, and all citizens through educational opportunities, cooperative endeavors, and civic engagement. Support for WPR comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More at umr.com.
Winter's over and the snow is gone. Go get your gloves and pull your work boots on. Gotta clear that patch, pick them stones. You know the sun is gonna warm those lazy bones. Winter's over and the work's just starting. Time to get busy in the family garden. Turning the soil and planting the seeds. Laying down mulch and pulling up weeds. Mowing the corn, row on row. Then you stand right back and you watch it grow. No, even little children gotta do their part and help the things grow.
I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. My guest, Jim Pope, the author of Everyday Adventures of a Farm Boy in the 50s. He writes, "We sometimes have bugs to deal with in the garden, but Ma and Pa don't like spraying poisons on them. They say if that stuff is strong enough to kill the bugs, it might well also do bad things to the birds who eat the bugs, and to us too. As far as the weeds go, Pa brags to neighbors that he has the best non-poisonous weed killers in the entire civilized world. Three boys with hoes." One of those boys with us right now, Jim Pope, author of that book for fourth graders and also the head of the Rural Heritage Reading Project. Jim, You had, what, about a two-acre garden on that spread in Waupaca County?
Yes, it was at least that big. And that was one of the things, a small farm family. Everybody had a big garden because, again, as I mentioned earlier, we were poor and didn't know it, but we always had a lot to eat. And that was because of a big garden, which not only meant lots of fresh vegetables and other things to eat, meant a lot of work getting that in. And we always had a lot of meat. But so that made it, in addition to all those routine things that you had on a small farm, there was milking every morning, milking every night, and all the feeding and the field work. One of the big routines was mealtime, because we ate we ate well, and so that's and supper time was kind of the time that we got together and rested from a hard day's work and talked about things and ate a lot.
Well, you talk about the garden as a seasonal cycle of life that starts when that seed catalog arrives in the dead of winter. And I'm a gardener, too, although certainly not on your scale. But, man, when that seed catalog comes on a cold January morning, you know spring is right around the corner.
Right. Yes, that was the highlight. And I know there's a chapter in here about our garden, and it talks about that very thing, about my mom getting the seed catalog, and we boys would help plot out the garden for that year.
And a lot of work, particularly watering when you don't have plumbing. You know, you had to carry those buckets of water by hand.
Right. We had two pumps, a hand pump off the back porch by the house, and we had an electric pump in the barn that was used to water the cows. But most of the time, we did okay with the rain and that type of thing. Our soil wasn't sandy like it is in central Wisconsin up by Plover and that, so we
right.
did. But there were times when we would have to take buckets of water out to that garden. We'd spend 2-3 hours an afternoon carrying buckets out, watering the plants, and fortunately, that didn't happen too often, though.
Now, if you just joined us, Jim is a former school administrator, Jim Pope, who retired and decided to spread the word about what it was like growing up on a rural Waupaca County farm in the 50s to fourth grade students across Wisconsin. It's the Rural Heritage Reading Project, which he is leading, and this book, Everyday Adventures of a Farm Boy in the 50s, beautifully written, beautifully illustrated hardcover book, and he gives away hundreds of copies. 3,000 copies? Is that what you
told me? A little bit over 3,000 so far in my retirement.
Just gives them away in order to spread the word about what it was like. And in order to give fourth grade kids who are so enamored with our technology and video games and cable television and all of that stuff, give them the experience of picking up a hardcover book and enjoying reading.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to the phones right now. We have Rick in Portage County right now. Rick, you're on Route 51 with Jim Pope.
Hello. My name is Rick. I live in Southeast Portage County, and I'm calling. I would like to take this opportunity to commend Mr. Pope for his efforts here, considering our young people today live in such a high-tech society, and I think if you can get a hold of them, so to speak, when they're young and more amenable to information, just about our historical society and about the way things used to be and how we got where we are, because I think history is such an sometimes lost in this hubbub of the everyday world, and how much we can actually learn from where we all came from. And I also worked with Mr. Pope for about 3 decades, and I want to say that it doesn't really surprise me that he's being so altruistic with his retirement and providing his time and money towards this, and I just want to call to commend him for it.
Well, thank you, Rick. It's nice hearing from you.
Yeah, same here.
Well, one of the things you raise a very interesting point in terms of one of the reasons behind the project is we're growing up on farms. Back then on small family farms, our family and all the neighbors, you learned a lot of values and good principles about personal responsibility, good work ethic, how to get along with people, because you had to get along with people. You couldn't do everything by yourself on a farm. Somebody, you needed help coming in to shred the corn, to thrash the oats, to chop the silage. You needed help on all of that, so neighbors would help one another out. If a farmer got hurt for a while, I remember one of our neighbors got hurt with a bad back for about 3 months, and everybody just took turns going to his house and milking in the morning, the afternoon. It affected us kids. We had to help too, because the mornings that my dad would go over and do Carl's milking for him, that meant a lot more work for us, because we had to cover his dad's work. But all of that stuff, we learned that, and we had to live it on a daily basis, because that's the way life was. And nowadays, kids don't get the opportunity to do that. And so that's one of the reasons that with the book, we try to take the kids along with us. We've written it in the first person, where it's just like the kids are walking with me along the farm, around the farm, and I'm telling them what's going on. And they learn some of those principles and values, and it's the kind of thing where those principles and values are just as relevant in their life today. It's just they don't get the same opportunities to learn them as we did as farm kids back then.
Well, I think that's a really, really excellent point. And in this day and age where we read so much about and listen to people talk about people being able, you know, when they just sit at home all the time and they're either playing video games or on the internet or whatever, they really have or don't learn how to interact and help other people. And I want to commend you for your efforts here and keep up the good work. Terrific.
Thank you, Rick. Appreciate it.
Rick, thanks so much for the phone call. And again, if you'd like to find out more about the Rural Heritage Reading Project, it's ruralheritagereadingproject.org. Now, maybe it's because I work in radio. Maybe it's because I work for Wisconsin Public Radio, which actually got its start back in the 20s as primarily a service for people who lived on farms, who needed to hear weather reports and hear things about growing conditions. But there's one portion in your book that I really like about the you washing dishes, you, the kids and Ma and Pa, and listening to the old tube radio in the kitchen. I'm wondering if you could read that for us, Jim.
Yeah, you brought up an interesting point, I remember, and I'm getting at this in book two, was that part of our classes at our one-room schoolhouse, all 8 grades, we had 16 kids my last year there, and we had public radio, the art instruction. I can't remember the name of it. I'd have to look at my notes. The music class that we got over the radio from Wisconsin Public Radio. But what you're talking about here is the chapter 2, Supper Time and Country Concerts. And that was one time of the day that the routine was a very pleasant routine. We'd come in and we'd eat and we'd just interact as a family there. But after supper, everybody had to help. And one of the things we had to help out on was washing the dishes. So this is from chapter 2. One thing about dishwashing time is how the most enjoyable part of it has nothing to do with the dishes themselves. Before Ma starts the actual washing part every night, she reaches up to the shelf over the refrigerator and turns on the old radio. It's a more or less rectangular box with a speaker on the left, a big dial on the right, and all sorts of electric tubes and wires buried deep in its innards. The speaker is kind of scratchy with static and faraway stations fading in and out all the time, but such a condition just makes the clear signal seem that much more enjoyable. We can hear things on the radio a lot better at night than in the daytime. There seems to be a lot less interference and not as many stations crossing over each other as there are during the daylight. Every night with supper dishes, Ma fine-tunes the dial to the Grand Ole Opry or to a radio station in Chicago that has the National Barn Dance. It seems no matter what's on, though, Mom's always saying that one song or another reminds her of an old show called Suppertime Frolic she listened to as a kid. She says many of the singers we're listening to while we wash the dishes are the same folks she heard as a teenager many years back. Somewhere along the course of our washing and drying dishes, most nights it turns into sort of a rhythmical experience with our work keeping the beat of the music. Rising over the dishpan noises, we sing along to some of the tunes that we have to be careful to not get too carried away. Ma's a pretty good singer and we really like her yodeling, but when we kids join in, the total sound is not always very pleasant, especially when we try to sing notes we can't comfortably reach. The real tip-off that we've stretched beyond our limits is when our dog Tippy starts howling from out on the front porch. That's when we know we've gone too far and it's time to back off. I have to admit, though, that sometimes it's tempting to try and keep Tippy singing along with us. So dishwashing is country concert time in the kitchen.
Everyday Adventures of a Farm Boy in the 50s. Jim, that's just a wonderful story, one of many wonderful stories. What kind of response do you get from the fourth graders that that you share all of this with?
Oh, it's just really amazing. They enjoy it. And again, we've written it so that they can learn some things, but still have fun with the stories. And it's with fourth graders, it's got to be about the story. And so we try to keep those as exciting, but they're all true stories, with, me and my brothers and my mom and pa and my grandpa. And, they are amazed at some of the things that we could have fun with without having a lot of material stuff to work with. We spend in some of the classes, we have door prizes, and I, tell them, one of the door prizes is a stick pencil. I tell them stories about how my grandpa, they had so little money back when he was a boy, he'd tell me how they'd make their own pencils, using clay and the ash from the chimney and the wood stoves. And they find it, when I first started telling that story, I had to explain what a wood stove was, because a lot of kids just don't know that at all.
You had no furnace.
Right, that's correct. Yep, no furnace, no running water, and it was just, that's the way life was.
Now you mentioned your grandpa in the book. Did he live with you in that farmhouse, or was he just a frequent visitor?
He was a frequent visitor. The farm we lived on originally was farmed by my great-grandpa, Guy Pope, in the teens and 20s, and then his son Charlie, my grandpa, he had it during the 30s, and then my mom and dad started living there in the 40s. And my grandpa then moved to the farm just immediately south of us. And so it was within, about a mile of us. And we'd walk back and forth, and he'd come up and help my dad out and vice versa. And so my grandpa was a big well of wisdom for me when I was growing up.
Shared stories. I mean, you're sharing stories right now with kids in the year 2011, but he was sharing stories with you 60 years ago about what it was like in 1911.
Yes, right. Yeah, that would definitely cover a 100-year span with the things that he would tell me stories about when he was a kid.
And one of the things I learned reading your book, and it's something that your grandpa shared with you as a kid, is that you can actually eat cattail shoots and they taste like asparagus.
Oh, yeah. That was, you didn't do it very often because my dad didn't want us, cutting down all the cattails. He said they had a good job to do for the muskrats and that kind of thing. But, I think the most important lesson I ever learned from my grandpa was that you can hear corn growing if the conditions are just right. And if you've had a heavy rain and it's a hot July and it's bright, hot, sunshiny the next day, you can go out and lie between the corn rows well away from a road and you can actually hear the corn grow and the cells cracking as they expand. Now, I've got people that just don't believe that at all, but man alive, once you experience it, you never forget it. But those are the kinds of things I would have never realized that had it not been for my grandpa.
Jim Pope of the Rural Heritage Reading Project. We've still got 10 minutes left of the show. If you want to join us, there's room for you. We've got wide open phone lines at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. Gonna mulch it deep and low, gonna make it fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, please bless these seeds I sow. Please keep them safe below, till the rain comes tumbling down.
Support for WPR comes from Northwind Renewable Energy in Stevens Point, partnering with agricultural and commercial industries to invest in central Wisconsin's renewable energy future. More about the benefits of solar for business at northwindre.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. You are listening to Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network with author Jim Pope of the Rural Heritage Reading Project. And Jim, one of my favorite stories of yours from the book is when you dropped that prized possession, your baseball, down the second hole in the two-seater outhouse and what you had to do to retrieve it.
Yeah, that it's interesting you should bring that one up. When we were first starting, the first 500 or 600 kids that I read to, and they got a chance to read the entire book after we gave it to them. We would survey them and say, what were your favorite, what chapter did you like the best and why, what one did you like the worst and why not? Because I'm still learning how to write for fourth graders. And about 85% of the kids picked an outstanding outhouse as their favorite chapter. Now, my wife tells me that what did I expect? Because at the start of that chapter, I put a warning, author's warning, like we had with a previous episode. Parts of this one are not very pleasant. If you're sensitive or weak of stomach, you might want to just go on to the next chapter. And she correctly kind of evaluated that as being a challenge.
But we've got a couple of paragraphs highlighted here. Why don't you read those for us?
Sure. This is from an outstanding outhouse. Inside the outhouse, we usually have store-bought toilet paper, but sometimes we run out. That's no big deal, as those times we just use pages from the oldest Sears catalog or from outdated seed catalogs to get the job done. They're a little scratchy, but if you wrinkle a page up a whole bunch before you use it, it works. It's not as nice as toilet paper, but it's better than being out in the woods when you have to go and you have to use leaves. Grandpa says when he was a kid, they used corn cobs a lot in the outhouse because they never had any actual toilet paper. And there were too many kids in the family to make a Sears catalog last long enough until the next one came. According to him, if you use fresh corn cobs before they've gotten a chance to dry out too much and become too rough, they're not too uncomfortable. Now, that's a grandpa story I'll just take his word for and not try it out for myself.
There we have another grandpa story from Jim Pope. Let's go to the phones right now. Tony in Athens, you're on Route 51 with Jim Pope. Hello, Tony.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I appreciate the topic today. I'm I'm a country boy, I'm a farm boy myself. And a lot of the stories your guest is talking about and writing about are resonating with me. In fact, we have a barn dance at our farm every year, and in one of the outhouses that we rent to get it, we have an electric corn cob that we have a cord coming out of, and we plug that in. But my question
is that a musical instrument, Tony? Can you play that as well?
Yeah, it's a modernized version of what your guests are just talking about.
Man, I would just hope it doesn't short out.
The city folk try and plug it in though. My question has to do with, I feel like a lot of what the guest is writing about, these romantic, bucolic, pastoral stories, are rooted in agriculture, and more specifically the family farm, which, as you know, is being consolidated and driven out of existence by large-scale agribusiness and large-scale agriculture, and the host of all these romantic stories, the rural settings, and the family farm is being driven out of existence, and because these farms, these large-scale the factory farms view the countryside as like a resource suck or a waste dump. You know, it's become totally functional. It's based, you know, profitability and meeting these margins, and all the culture it seems to be lost. I wonder if this concerns your guest at all.
Let's,
or if he could comment on the state of the loss of the family farm
we're down to our last 3 minutes. Let me give Jim a chance to respond.
Yeah, I would look at that as more of an economic necessity than anything. For those 40 or 50 years in the early 1900s that you had small family farms, they were that way because that's where technology was. You had from horsepower to tractor power, and then the equipment started catching up to the mechanization, and the technology advanced to the point where the family farm, the ones that we're talking about, you had maybe a dozen, 15, 16 cows, and you couldn't afford this new technology. And if you didn't have a lot of kids, you had to buy the equipment, and as you bought the equipment, you had to have more land, so you had more consolidation. So I look at that not as a something that was deliberately done because of some different motives. It was done because out of economic necessity, the farms had to grow in order to provide all the food that farms provide for people today.
Jim, we've lost something in the process, haven't we?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
How close do you still feel to your family, your three brothers, your mom, your dad, or the memories of them because of that small farm life that you spent together?
Oh, it's the kind of thing where you never lose that. And even though one of my father passed away about 35 years ago, my youngest My younger brother, Davey, passed away. But the thoughts and memories I have are tied in directly to the unit we had, the family unit that we had on the farm. And it was, family was number one, because you had to support one another. And you had to help out, and everybody had their responsibilities. And there was a lot of work, but there was a lot of love and a lot of fun, too.
Jim Pope, this has been marvelous. Thank you so much for spending the last hour with us.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
We want to thank today's guest, James L. Pope, or Jim Pope, as he likes to be known, leader of the Rural Heritage Reading Project and author of Everyday Adventures of a Farm Boy in the 50s. If you'd like to find out more about Jim and about his project, check out ruralheritagereadingproject.org. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Ginger Alden. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by John Denver, John McCutcheon, Tom T. Hall, Arlo Guthrie, and Canned Heat. Next week, we take Route 51 from the farm to the forest as we welcome Joe Ramsey, the director of Empowered Dream Hunts. That's an organization that takes disabled people out into the woods to experience the rehabilitating joy of hunting. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we're heading out of town.